Hey, it's a local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today, and my guest today, Scott Mandrell from Edward Jones Investments. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yes. It's been a while. It's been a few months since you've been in, and with all the all the action going on with tariffs and all the stock market seems like it's up and down and crazy. I thought we'd have you in to, just to discuss a little bit and answer some questions. First of all, just some people may have not have heard our last interview, but it is on Listen on Demand. Go to our webpage, wjbmradio.com, and you can catch up on Scott. But Scott, you grew up in the area?
I did.
Yeah.
Born in Alton, lived in the Alton-Godfrey area most of my life. I had family that farmed up in Kane, and I was gone in the Army in college for a while, but otherwise my whole life's been right here in the area.
Yeah. And married with children?
I am married with four children. And one left in school, in high school. The others are moving on through college and out into their life. So,
one left in high school?
One left in high school.
One left in high school. I remember those days.
And they're all driving. They're all driving cars.
Oh, yes. Now, this climate in investments, stocks, bonds, et cetera, is what we might call kind of a volatile climate.
That is an appropriate term. It is a volatile climate.
Yes. In this atmosphere, this volatile climate, should we be alarmed? Should we be ready to jump off a cliff or make some great moves? Or what is it? What do you think? What's your opinion?
Well, there's always an opportunity, no matter what the market is doing, for adjustments oftentimes. And that's why you should be in touch with your financial advisor or whoever you work with if you're investing. But no, there is no unanticipated really situation right now. Volatility is a normal byproduct of market fluctuation. Corrections are normal, and ups and downs are normal in the market. So what's happening right now can be attributed to any number of things, and people may attribute the current circumstances to a particular thing that's going on. But we see a correction about every 4 years. We see what is referred to as a bear market, and quite frankly, we don't even necessarily know that what we're seeing right now is a bear market. A bear market is defined by a correction of 20% or more, and we're not there yet by any means.
What's a bull market then?
A bull market is when the market is up, and for the foreseeable future, there is a confidence that the market will continue to grow.
I see.
On average, we see about 3-5% corrections a year. Usually a 10% correction annually is not uncommon from an average assessment of market behavior over time. And bear markets happen on average about every 4 years. So there's nothing necessarily unusual about it. But people oftentimes, they're not paying attention every day. When things are good, when markets are up, there isn't a lot of attention to this. When markets are down, obviously it causes anxiety and people will pay more attention. And the media will, so present company accepted.
Yes.
But the media is oftentimes beating the drum a little bit louder if it causes anxiety.
Selling commercials.
It's selling commercials. And I tell people all the time, today, and the market's up today, by the way, the Dow at any rate, but if there was an earthquake in California this week, we probably wouldn't be talking about the markets.
Yeah, I hear you. Maybe.
Maybe.
Hey, we talked about something some point in time when we were talking. You're talking about risk tolerance. Can you explain that term?
Sure. So when people make the decision to invest in securities, they are ideally, at least from an Edward Jones philosophy and perspective, we're talking about long-term investment and retirement planning or legacy planning, estate planning. And these are long-term propositions. So when people make a decision to do that, they have to understand and should understand the risks associated with investing and really be clear on their own goals. And so when you do a risk tolerance assessment, you're talking about, you know, things like what is, you know, where am I in my life, in my own personal timeline? If you're a young person and you know that you're going to see ups and downs, you know, and bear markets every 4 years and that sort of thing, it's quite likely that you have a great deal of risk tolerability because you're going to have decades of work ahead of you. Markets are going to fluctuate. When markets are down, you're going to have years of you know, to go through the recovery period and the correction and the recovery and the correction. As you get older and you get closer to retirement, it's important that you anticipate these cycles and that you talk with your financial advisor to have strategies in place that will allow for you to minimize the downside impacts of market volatility through time. And so while it's important to make money and have the kind of gains that you're trying to achieve, it's also important on the flip side to know where you are in your own progression and start to increasingly probably limit those risks as you near retirement or those end life stages.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I know when I was younger and I was, you know, in business and I had different people, come to me and go, you want to invest? I go, I'm investing in myself now 100%. You know, I really didn't want to, get into investing in stocks and whatever, because, you know, I was a big enough risk myself. So I didn't need any other risks.
Right.
You know, since then, of course, I've gotten older. I've changed my mind on that and, you know, have investments. But one thing, one word we hear so much when we turn on the TV, or streaming or whatever is, tariff this, tariff that. What do you think about tariffs?
Well, tariffs have been a part of the landscape, the financial landscape, for as long as there have been countries, defined nations doing business with each other. The current situation right now.
Well, what is the idea of a tariff? What does a tariff do?
So a tariff is a financial imposition, a charge that is imposed on the goods, or in some cases services, but generally the goods that are being imported from one nation into another nation. So, you know, one of the things that has been kind of curious over the last several months as the current wave of tariff talks are taking place is that there's the sense that these are something new that are being imposed right now. Tariffs are not only historically present as we look at, you know, the history of the world and the history of our own nation, but we already have tariffs in place. Mm-hmm. So the tariffs that have been discussed over the last several weeks and months really are heightened numbers. They're larger impositions of the costs of the importation of these goods. But one of the things to keep in mind is if you go out on the street today, right, you'll see cars from Southeast Asia. You'll see Japanese cars and South Korean vehicles. And, you know, we see all these cars, maybe a BMWs and Audis and all these different vehicles. When you go to other countries, one of the things that people will notice right away is the fact that you don't see American cars on the streets of other nations.
They don't want them, huh?
Well, they have imposed such great tariffs on us that it has made it difficult for our companies oftentimes to compete in other parts of the world. And it's not just on automotive pieces, but on goods in general, whether those be agricultural goods or other things. And while everyone comes to this conversation maybe from a different perspective, there is a very purposeful outcome, I think, that has been articulated, and we certainly hope that, you know, that will come to pass. And that is really the idea of bringing some of the manufacturing and industrial jobs that have been lost in the United States back to the United States, if indeed the environment is more attractive for people to manufacture and to sell their goods that are made here in the United States to the American consumer base, which is the most powerful consumer base in the world without question.
Yes. I mean, I just know growing up, graduated from school, high school in 76, and at that time in the 80s, there was a lot of manufacturing going on still then, you know, in our area around here. You know, guys would talk about, well, you going to college? Or, nah, I think I'm just going to go down the street here, get me a job, you know, make great money, you know. Right. And all those types of the glass works and the different steel type factories, et cetera, have gone by the wayside. So that would be good to have some. Get our manufacturing back.
Well, and sure. and certainly the heavy industry, you know, is one piece of it. But the economic landscape and the, you know, the consumer product landscape has changed dramatically over the last 40 years or so. And so there are a lot of jobs that aren't necessarily, you know, the old, for lack of a better phrase, you know, the dirty industrial type manufacturing jobs. There are a lot of, you know, intermediate and high tech and light industrial opportunities that we're still offshoring today.
Yeah.
And I think part of the outcome of this, hopefully, is the fact that we see the incentive for companies, for business owners to relocate those jobs here to the United States.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Scott Mandrell with me from Edward Jones Investments. Talking over finances, financing, what's going on. You know, one thing, several years ago, we took a trip to Ireland, right? And of course, you have the cliffs and you have all these different things going on. You know what the most amazing thing to me in Ireland was? The small towns, all right? You go through the small towns and it was hustle, bustle, and just one business after another, a hardware store, a restaurant, you know, a jewelry store, a clothing store, a woman's clothing store, a men's clothing store, shoe stores, all up and down the street, and people walking up and down the street, just the way our small towns were back in, you know, the 70s, 60s, right. 70s. Now that's all gone. You know, it's maybe trying to come back a little bit with, you know, like the TIF districts have helped a bit, you know, but it's a struggle. It's not easy. Anyway, you know, I noticed that I'd like to see that come back, you know, I mean, of course, you know, the big box stores from everything from China, you know, that's taken over.
Right. And it was a great vulnerability, really. It's not just, you know, clothing manufacturing and you know, the household products and things like that. But quite frankly, and I think this has been addressed at a national level, pharmaceuticals, obviously, heavy automotive. If, you know, God forbid, we don't ever want to, and as a veteran myself, you know, war is not something we ever want to have to engage in again. But the reality is that a strong offense is the best defense, and having the best military in the world is important. Our automotive industry, and people oftentimes forget this, plays a key role in our defense readiness because oftentimes it is those automotive manufacturing facilities that are converted in short order to supply heavy equipment for in times of war.
One World War II.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go to another subject. Interest rates. Mm. And let's say where the interest rates are. And how about this conflict between the Fed and our President Trump on the interest rates. What's the scoop on that?
Well, the conflict between the Federal Reserve Bank and the political administrations is not new to this administration. This one's, like so many things, oftentimes heightened right now by media coverage. The Fed is ideally an independent and non-political organization.
Right.
They are extra constitutional. They are not part of the government, theoretically, although their impact is obviously intertwined with policy. But we have seen over the last several years a bit of politicization of the Fed. And just this past week, for example, it was rather unheard of the degree to which Chairman Powell weighed into the issue of tariffs and those sorts of things. Probably a little exposing a little bit of personal bias that maybe was not helpful to some of the market behavior last week, but we think that is probably passed.
I see. I mean, what's the 30-year term now?
So interest rates right now, I mean, it depends upon things like your credit rating and perhaps a relationship you might even have with your personal banker if you bank locally or something like that. It's probably fair to say that right now someone could find a home loan, a 30-year home loan, somewhere between 6.5% and 7.5%, which is really, from a historical perspective, is rather normal for most of the last, century, the last 20, most of the 20th century, second half anyway.
Yeah. And the question is, how do we get to that 2% and 3%? How did that happen?
So after really going all the way back to 9/11, there was a lot of effort to drive down interest rates to promote the purchasing of American products and some other things. But we really got into an almost 0% interbank lending rate, but now 10 years ago, better or something like that, a decade or more ago, the rates were really, really low. So a few years ago, someone would get a home loan. There were home loans, mortgages that were in around 3, maybe even a little less in a few cases that I've heard of, but 3, 3.5, something like that. Well, if you were 25 years old, 10 years ago, let's say it was 10 years ago, you were 25 or whatever, or even 5 years ago for that matter, and you saw rates that were 3.5%. And then you decided a few years have passed and you decided you finally met the right person and you were going to get married and start a family and it's time to buy the house. And you go to buy the house and they say it's going to be 7.5%. That seems like an astronomical jump.
Right.
But it was a result of some rather purposeful intervention by the Fed in the raising of interest rates back in 2022. And those rates were favorable for investors in terms of particularly conservative investors who had money in CDs and things like that. And they took advantage of those heightened rates that took place in 22. But that was very detrimental to existing bonds and things like that. But the same thing that had happened back in the Carter administration 40 years before, which had not really happened in the intervening years, was the lending rate was raised very quickly in a very short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
And so in January of 2022, you probably could still get that attractive mortgage. And you were probably getting nothing on your CDs. By the summer of 2022, you had a pretty attractive yield on your CDs, but all of a sudden mortgage rates were doubled.
Yeah.
But again, it's an unfortunate reality, but the for those people who missed out on that 3% rate, but you and I, Chris, probably in our lifetime, and most of us who are 40 or over, and you're over 40, I think, right?
Oh yeah,
but I mean, most of us in our lifetime have paid somewhere between 7% and 9% probably on a mortgage.
I remember Brenda; she drug up some paperwork from years ago when we bought the hotel, and she goes, "Look at this. We paid 11%, on the money to get that, to make that purchase, and just glad to get the money at 11%.
Right. And you probably had an opportunity to refinance subsequent to that as rates dropped.
Yes.
One of the things that I think is a little bit, and this is an important thing to understand for people in the home buying business or just out in the marketplace, but one of the reasons why people are kind of stuck in their homes right now is if they purchased a home five years ago, 7 years ago, and they're paying 2.5%, 7%, or 3.5%.
Even 4%.
Right. Yeah, they're loath to sell that house and get into a mortgage now that's higher. I oftentimes would encourage people to actually crunch the numbers and to, assess what it is you're trying to do with your life. Sometimes those numbers shouldn't necessarily imprison you. If it's time to make a move, you have that conversation and contact your realtor.
We're just about out of time. We could go on for a long time, but one thing I want to ask you is, in this volatile time, why is it important for somebody to have a financial advisor versus just trying to do it all on their own?
Well, I think probably the paramount thing is to remove emotion. When even Of course, you know, it's the old adage about, you know, you should, you know, a doctor shouldn't necessarily work on themselves. A lawyer shouldn't represent themselves. You know, in a financial environment, you know, it's even good for those of us who are in the financial world sometimes to seek, you know, an outside voice, because it is an emotional thing sometimes when you're making decisions about your own life. And it's good to sometimes have that outside perspective. And that's what we hope at Edward Jones to do with our clients, is to, you know, to have that trusting relationship and to know our clients well enough that we have insight into their lives and their situations, and then sort of bring an outside and really hopefully an educated perspective to this. There is a great tendency to have short-term memory on things like this. And so people right now are hearing a lot of stuff in the news about negative market things. Mm-hmm. And really, they need to talk to their financial advisor and maybe let that person remind them of long-term trends in the market and the fact that this too shall pass.
Yes. Scott Mandrell, thanks so much for coming in. Always enjoy conversing. And you take care.
Thank you.